afternoon. It's March 17th. It's 3:30. This is the Senate Education Committee. With us today, we have Senator Gardner, Senator Huggins, myself, Senator Dunleavy. I expect momentarily Senator Stevens and Senator Giesel. Senator Giesel, I know, has some committee meetings, so she'll be in and out. We're going to hear three items today. First item will be SB 64, school bond debt reimbursement. This is a bill that has been put through by Senator Anna McKinnon, and her staff will be here to speak to that in just a moment. SB 31, sexual abuse assault prevention programs. This is a bill by Senator Berta Gardner. She and her staff will be here to present on that. And then we'll have a presentation by the Department of Education Early Development on the ESEA, Elementary and Secondary Act Flexibility Waiver. This will be led by Commissioner Mike Hanley with DED. So with that, we're going to move into the process. Senate Bill 64, School Bond Debt Reimbursement. Again, a bill by Senator Anna McKinnon. We have staff that will come up and identify themselves for the record. We had public testimony was open on that, left open on that bill. Is there anything, please state your name for the record, and if there's anything you want to add as part of your testimony from last meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Laura Pierre, staff to Senator McKinnon. I don't have anything to add. I understand that there may potentially be an amendment coming forward. I would just say that Senator McKinnon is in full support, and it was her original intention to include in the bill.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone in Juneau that would like to testify upon this issue? Please come forward, state your name for the record. Figure about 3 minutes.
Absolutely.
And who you're with?
Absolutely.
And as soon as you do that, you can begin your testimony. Let the record show that Senator Stevens is here as well. And I do anticipate Senator Giesel any moment.
Thank you, Chair Dunleavy, members of the committee. My name is Dr. Mark Miller. I'm the superintendent of schools here in Juneau. I've been superintendent for 9 months. When I took this job, nobody informed me that oil was going to cut down to $50 a barrel and I was going to be involved in some of the most difficult budget decisions that we've ever had to make. So whoever was supposed to disclose that to me, I'm a little ticked.
Are you from in-state or out-of-state?
I was from out-of-state.
In Alaska, we go big or we go home.
All right. Thank you, sir. I'll take a note on that. One of the other things that I've learned in Alaska is that sometimes when we talk about situations like this, we have Anchorage and we have everybody else. It reminds me of that joke, where does the 800-pound gorilla sit? And the answer to that? Is any place he wants. I really believe that the way this bill is written right now allows Anchorage, who has an election in April, to take one more bite at the apple, if you will, and then leaves the rest of us out there alone without the opportunity to do that. I would encourage the committee, if you would, to consider moving the date up so that we all get one more shot at this before you sunset it for a period of time. Giving us a little bit of time to plan, a little bit of time to know what we're dealing with, and one last time to make some critical decisions around the way we budget, what our priorities are to keep our schools up and running, especially when we're in a situation where it could be an extended period of time before we're able to refinance it. So if you would, before you put the apple on the table, let the big gorilla take one bite and take it off. We'd all appreciate just one more nibble. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think we have is it Camry Altifer? Altifer? Would you like to come and testify on this particular item? Okay. Deanne Watkins? Okay. Lisa Paraday? Do you wish to testify? Okay. Is anyone online? Okay, no one online, so at this point we're going to close public testimony on SB 64. Are there any amendments?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Huggins.
Briefities?
I'm online.
Okay, somebody online. I'll recognize whomever it is, have them identify themselves for the record. Okay. we're back in session. We do have somebody online. Could you please identify yourself, who you're with, and begin your testimony and plan in about 3 minutes, please?
Yes, my name is Dina Paramo, the superintendent of the Matson Borough School District. Not a gorilla. Thank you, Senator Dunleavy. In regard to Senate Bill 64, I want to speak briefly about the school bond debt reimbursement program. This program is a great example of a highly effective state government program working for its people. The Matsu Borough benefited not too long from a bond package that built 6 new educational facilities in our community. This program is also an integral part of a sound facility maintenance strategy, as major maintenance has its place in providing operational efficiencies. Per the National Center for Educational Statistics, facilities maintenance produces savings by decreasing equipment replacement costs, decreasing renovation costs, and decreasing overhead costs, such as utility bills. In the Matsu Borough School District, we have implemented an effective preventative maintenance program that aims to extend the useful life of our facilities and their systems. However, even with preserving our current assets as they exist today, our educational infrastructure does have a standard life expectancy. For that reason, we are appreciative that this legislation reinstates the program after 5 years. Our district is unique as compared with other Alaskan districts. We are a growing school district with additional square footage needs to support unhoused students. Over the last 10 years, the Matsu Borough School District has grown by a mean of 232 students per year, and we currently have over 80 modular units in place to serve as additional classroom space. These modular units help us get by and act as a stopgap measure while new schools are being built. Given the importance of this program, we cannot support the discontinuance of the school bond debt reimbursement program altogether. However, the Matanuska Borough School District's Board of Education and Administration alike understand the immense financial challenges facing the state. We know that everyone must give in times of scarcity, and that this measure is being proposed out of the necessity to limit spending from the state constitutional budget reserve. On behalf of the Matsu Borough School District, I wish to thank you for your ongoing support and consideration of education. I appreciate the time you've provided today as well, and I would gladly answer any questions the committee has for me. Again, this program is an effective and efficient use of state resources. Nevertheless, Matsu understands the state of the state and that we help support the future generations of Alaskans by tightening our belts today. You can be guaranteed that after the 5-year hiatus this bill provides, Matsu will be before you with a school bond debt reimbursement program application to support the needs of our growing community. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Dr. Paramo? Senator Huggins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a comment. I think it's important we recognize people for what they've done. And in my experience in Matsu, all of three of my wife and I's kids went to Matsu, and the oldest one is almost 30 years old. So that's been a while. But I'd just like to say in Dr. Paramo's case, she has by far the most positive profile. I would even go as far as to call her as a role model as a superintendent, and has brought our school district into the new century. And I'd just like to congratulate her on that. Thank you, Dr. Paramo.
Thank you, Senator Huggins. And that's coming from a former school board president of Matsu. Are there any questions for Dr. Paramo? Seeing none, thank you. Are there any amendments? Excuse me. Is there anyone else online? We're going to close public testimony. Are there any amendments? Senator Huggins.
Yes. I offer amendment number one, which is whiskey.1. And just it essentially...
Can I object for purposes of discussion?
Yes.
I'll object.
So speaking to the objection, essentially when you see on the different lines in the bill that shows May 1st, 2015 as the start date for this, as far as the band of width for effectiveness, it moves it back to January 1, 2015, which it's a retrospective look, if you will, and that's the essence, if you will, of the change.
Thank you for that explanation. Are there any questions or comments on the amendment?
Chairman, Chair.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. I want to speak for a minute to my school district, Anchorage, and to the voters in Anchorage, and explain why I'm going to support this vote, this amendment, and it breaks my heart. I've never voted against school bonds, and I want my colleagues in my community to understand that in voting against school buildings effectively right now, it's my hope that the funds saved will go inside classrooms, at least in part, over the coming years. This is a five-year hiatus. And there was the gentleman from Juneau earlier talked about letting everybody get one more bite at the apple, or alternatives to draw the line here today. And I think we're already out of apples.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions from members of the board regarding the amendment? I'm going to remove my objection. Is there a motion to move the item?
Without objection.
Amendment number one has been adopted.
Okay. So amendment number one has been adopted. And is there a motion to move the item forward, the entire bill?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I move that Senate Bill 64, as amended, be moved from committee with individual comments and zero fiscal note.
Seeing no objection, we will be moving Senate Bill 64 to the next committee. And with that, we're going to take a brief at ease to sign the documents. We're back in session. We're moving down to SB 31. It's sexual abuse assault prevention programs, and this is a bill that was introduced by Senator Gardner. This is the second hearing today. And Senator Gardner, if you would like to have your staff come forward or yourself, state your name for the record and begin testimony. I know we have folks online too that will answer some questions and also present.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to, if it's okay with you, just have my staff present.
Yes, sure.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. My name is T.J. Presley, staff to Senator Gardner. And I'm just going to briefly go over the changes that we've made since the past meeting that we discussed this bill so that we can get to the testimony, which is two curriculum experts, two people from different parts of the country who have been involved in crafting curriculum for Aaron's Law-type programs around the country. So they will speak to some examples of curriculum which are in your packet so that we can just see what the programs will look like when they are come to fruition. So just to go over the changes from the last version of the bill, you have a new version in front of you that addresses some of the concerns by both superintendents when we were in our last hearing and some clarification, some language changes for the Department of Education. So there is a document on your in your packet that says a sectional analysis for version H, CS for Senate Bill 31. And there will be another change coming to this, a new CS coming that we are discussing currently. This first section two, which we won't go over here because we're meeting with our partners in the Health and Social Services Department, DEED, and the superintendents to work out this one last section, but I will go over the other sections that we have decided to move forward on. So section one, obviously there's no changes, it just makes the short title of the bill Aaron's Law. Section two, I've noted we're working on, and we'll come back to the committee with that, some changes.
We're going to take just a brief release.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move CS for Senate Bill, Senate Bill substitute for Senate Bill 31.
Thank you. And I'm going to object for discussion. Please continue.
So moving on to Section 3, which is a substantive change that was a part of some of the requests from superintendents. And you'll recall that the request from superintendents was making a point that in the legislature there was a tendency to add on mandates without regard for removing any other things that were on them and taking any notice of that. So we did take notice of those things. We had long conversations with superintendents and tried to find out what their concerns were. And one of those concerns is addressed in Section 3. And we do make a substantive change in which we repeal the requirement that school districts pay for physical exams for teachers under the belief that the majority of teachers are paying for these physical exams through their health insurance and are getting these. And Senator Gardner does not believe that it's the core function of the school district to pay for the school physical exams for teachers. So that provision is repealed in Section 3. Moving on to Section 4, another substantive change. It does contain, in Section 4, the substance of Aaron's Law, which we all remember is the age-appropriate child sexual assault prevention programs for students in schools. There's some clarification language in there, which is why that section is substantive. And this is from the Department of Education with their endorsements on these clarifications. They did ask that in the original bill there was a sentence that asked that student parent teacher notifications be sent out, and that was not very clear because they didn't understand what a student parent teacher notification was. So in the bill we have clarified that a parent notification is sent telling parents that students will be getting this kind of training in schools. We also clarified in two places. At the request of the district, they said that it would be easier for them in terms of logistically training teachers, the adults, to match that up with people who are already mandated reporters. And so what we did was we clarified that for the adults in the building who the training is given to, that it matches up with mandated training trainers. So whoever is a mandated reporter in a school as an adult will receive the Aaron's Law training to teach students. And similarly, on frequency of training, how often are the teachers and administrators trained, we also just put that, comported it with mandated reporters, which is initially once you are hired and then once every 5 years, any time in that time frame. And then Section 5 is another part that we are still working on that we'll come back at the next hearing and talk about. Section 6 is another section that is still being worked on, but a consensus has been reached about how to go about that mandate on school districts. So currently, school districts are certificated preschool teachers, which is a world much smaller than that of all preschool teachers, are currently subjected to having to be fingerprinted and background checked twice, which is really a function of just two systems within DEED and Department of Education and Department of Public Safety having fingerprinting systems that can't talk. So it's really a duplicative statute and mandate just because you have these two systems that can't communicate fingerprint data with each other. So the workaround that we've come up with in order to eliminate this duplication is that for the purposes of conferring a teacher certificate upon a certificated preschool teacher, that the fingerprints that you give to the Department of Public Safety will be good for the purposes of giving that teacher certificate. So that way the duplication is not done. You don't have to give fingerprints to both Department of Education and to the Department of Public Safety. The way that it's written right now, it currently repeals the requirement for the second fingerprints, and in just very recent conversations with the school district and the Department of Public Safety, we came up with a better workaround that we think is amenable to all parties. So that will be apparent in the next version of the CS as well. And that is the last substantive change that we made. Section 7, the substantive change there with regards to physical examinations for kindergartners entering into school is the section that's still being worked on right now, and we will come back to the committee with more on the next version. And I will take any questions on the changes to the CS, but with that, we have two curriculum experts online to speak to some curriculum examples.
So first of all, are there any questions for members of the staff, or excuse me, members of the committee for Senator Gardner's staff? Okay, seeing none, there are two folks online that you wish to recognize and have put testimony regarding the curriculum?
Right, yes.
And the first person is going to be whom?
Either Rosemary Webb or Kate Tobias are the two experts that we've invited.
Okay, so is Rosemary Webb online?
Yes, I am.
Can you please identify yourself for the record and begin your who you're with and begin your testimony regarding the curriculum?
Sure. So I'm Rosemary Webb, and I am with Child Lores Prevention, and Teen Lores Prevention, and also on the line is my co-president, Jennifer Mitchell.
Okay. You can begin your testimony. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for having us today. Can we ask a question? With the Aaron's Law in Alaska, are you looking for pre-K through 12 education for sex abuse prevention?
Yeah, I have a lot of heads nodding, and it was in the affirmative, which means yes.
Yes, so it's pre-K through 12. Okay. We provide developmentally appropriate and research-based educational programming for pre-K through 6th grades and then also for grades 7 through 12. They both align with national health education standards. We feel it's very important that children are taught this information in schools. Unfortunately, 50% of children that do experience sexual abuse experience it in the home. With the mandated reporters working in schools, it is a perfect venue to teach children. The statistics vary. 1 in 10 children are sexually abused before the age of 18. And we really can see with early pre- and post-test comparative data on the Child Lores Prevention Think First and Stay Safe program and Teen Lores TV Newscast program, we can show that, you know, the education does improve children's knowledge, their skills and their knowledge as related to child sex abuse prevention. So we would be honored to work with schools in Alaska. We work with thousands of schools and school districts across the United States and also abroad, again, in teaching very, developmentally appropriate programming to children.
I have a question, I guess for the staff. Were the individuals going to talk about the actual
specific example curriculum or just the bond concept?
Through the chair, the expectation was that Rosemary could maybe just go through the packet, and we did discuss that. Maybe if Rosemary, you could just go through the packet and give some indication as to how the curriculum was developed. Yeah, in the packet that's
You know, how long, I mean, what's entailed in delivering the curriculum? Is it online? Is it in person? How long, et cetera, et cetera?
Certainly. So the program is for grades pre-K through 6. There are 7 lesson plans for grades pre-K through 2. Then there are an additional 10 through for grades 3 to 4 and an additional 11 lesson plans for grades 5 and 6. The program is available on CD, DVD, also available on USB flash drive, and soon to be available for site licensing, online subscription and licensing.
Okay. Questions? Anyone? Seeing none. DJ? Appreciate that, and I just want to make a note just for folks that are listening. State law mandates that curriculum is adopted at the local level. It's not something that's adopted at the state level, but these, what we're going over are just examples of curriculum that could be used and have been identified as possible curriculum for folks to use. So if there's no questions, excuse me, for Ms. Webb or Ms. Mitchell.
Mr. Chair.
Senator?
Thank you, and thank you very much for testifying, Ms. Webb. We're looking at, and we have, I believe, all of us in our packets, your Think First, Stay Face, Stay Safe school program, the Lesson Plan 8, Affection, Lure, Safe, and Healthy Boundaries. Is that one of your programs?
That is correct.
Can you just give school districts and listeners an idea of what the cost would be to use this in their buildings?
Certainly. Well, the programs themselves are turnkey, so they provide a 45-minute training video. They provide scripted lesson plans for all the different grade levels. And there are student videos that are also included and used within the lesson plans. So if one school ordered a program kit, and this, by the way, is a 2015 edition, actually just released this month. So if one school were to purchase it, it would be $489 plus shipping. However, there are bulk rates. So, you know, if a school district were to order the program, if there were six schools purchasing six kits, the price would be $439 each. And then it goes down the bulk rates, 11 to 50 kits, they're $389 down to $298 depending on the number of kits ordered.
Thank you.
Questions? Members of the committee? Thank you, Ms. Webb and Ms. Mitchell. Is Kate Tobias online?
I am.
Kate, can you identify yourself for the record, who are you with, and begin your testimony?
Absolutely. So my name is Kate Tobias. I am an employee of Committee for Children, which is an organization, a nonprofit organization that has created a social emotional learning program called Second Step, and then in addition an add-in unit of the Child Protection Unit, and that is what brings me to talk to you today is our Child Protection Unit through Senator Gardner and TJ, who brought us to you. So there are a few things. Do you want me to just start?
Yes, please.
Okay. So there are a few things in your packet. So let me tell you let's start with kind of what the Child Protection Unit is and where we are. So the vision statement of Committee for Children is safe children thriving in a peaceful world, and we believe that that's an extremely lofty goal. We believe that that's something that may or may not be an achievable goal, but that ultimately is our goal. And so that safety word is really important. And so feeling safe, feeling supported, finding sanctuary in school, in an organization where they feel protected and they feel, and that engages them to want to be more academically sound, more the ability to learn more effectively. So with that, we have come up with a program to create that environment. And one of the things that is so pertinent with this program, and I'll get into that in just a second, is our training program. And the training is all online. It comes with the purchase of the program. And with that being said, the purchase is per grade level. This is early learning, which we define as 3 to 5 year olds or pre-K to fifth grade. Is where the child protection unit falls through. So we don't have a comprehensive all the way up until 12th grade, but our second step program goes until 8th grade, and the second step program in middle school, so if you go from 6th through 8th, which we define as middle school, included in that program is developmentally appropriate lessons regarding relationships and positive relationships and how to engage in a positive relationship, romantic relationship, if you will, so those kinds of things. So with that being said, in your packet is an article called Safe, Supported, and Ready to Learn, and that's what I was just talking about. And so I know it's a big white paper document in front of you, but I want you to be able to take that and read it at your leisure. We know that kids are carrying many things in their backpacks besides homework, and some of those things are abuse and neglect and household dysfunction. And so those have come, we've done a lot of research with the ACEs study, Adverse Child Effect Syndrome study, and so when, and children can have between 1 and 10 traumatic experiences. And so a lot of our research has come from these adverse childhood experiences, and so creating that environment to create safety. And so with that, you have in your packet is our scope and sequence of our child protection unit. And so the idea of our child protection unit is to create a program that is heavily in training in mandatory training that is a necessity, if you will. So we have, because teachers and people who work with children are mandatory reporters, that's one aspect of it. But the other aspect of it is, where do they report? Who do the kids talk to? How do they report? How do they feel assertive enough in themselves? How do they feel emotionally equipped enough in themselves to report? So if something were to happen. But even bigger than that, and I know Aaron's Laws is specifically for sexual abuse, but bigger than that, our child protection unit focuses on, our program focuses on safety. So putting your seatbelt on when you drive in a car, putting your helmet on when you ride a bike or you ride your scooter. So there's you'll see in our scope and sequence, when we start with early learning, again, it is developmentally appropriate. It goes along with the students all the way up to fifth grade. So you'll see the same lessons, same six lessons all the way through the program, but they are different in their scope and sequence and their objectives of what the students will be able to do. So, for example, in week one of early learning, ways to stay safe, grown-ups should take care of you. But then in grade one or grade two, you're going to see adults should take care of you and keep you safe as well. But then you're identifying common safety rules, like the never-never rules, never play with guns, never play with fire. So we know that at 3 to 5, they're not necessarily going to have the ability to comprehend that, but maybe in second and third grade, they will have the ability to comprehend that. So you teach these programs in sequence, and then you teach them at each grade level. So this is, the six lessons are just a component of the program. And so you also have a sample lesson, which is safe and unsafe touches for grade two, that is a huge component of this program of teaching the children what those safe and unsafe touches are, who and how and why and when touches are appropriate or not appropriate. And so that's a huge part of our program. So, and then another thing, and I'm speaking really quickly. I'm sorry. I hope there's questions.
No, that's okay. How much longer do you think you need to wrap up?
Probably 2 minutes. I just want to tell you about the training, which is what is so...
2 minutes it is. You have a question?
Okay. So 2 minutes. I will tell you, so there's three modules of training, and a principal or a program coordinator is going to take that first module. And that first module is going to guide them through the plan for reporting. They're going to come up with, and they're going to be walked through all of this. This is all created for them, but they're going to be able to characterize it for their school, make it for their school. The second is for all staff, and that's everybody in your school or in your program that is working in any way connected to children. That's from the volunteers to the lunchroom aides to the librarian, teachers. And then the third is the people who will actually teach these lessons and how to teach these lessons. And everything is online. It's accessible online. It's scenario-based. It's simple. It's scripted. It's there for you, and it works. And there you go.
Sounds good. Any questions for Ms. DeVise? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. I want to recognize that online we have Kate Glover with Ledge Legal, Jane Urbanski with the Department of Health and Social Services, and Mary Bell and Stephanie Reitman-Birch with the Division of Public Health if there's any questions. Do we have any questions for members of the committee for those folks at this time? Seeing none, I'm going to remove my objection. And if there's no objection, the committee substitute for committee substitute is adopted. Are there any other folks in the audience or online that wish to testify? So we're going to leave public testimony open. We've been talking about amendments, and I think we're going to put the bill off to the side because there's going to be additional work on it. Is that correct, Senator?
That's correct. Thank you.
So that we'll put the bill off to the side. We'll take a brief at ease as we transition into the Department of Education. Thank you. Oh, and I do, before we sign off, I do want to thank Senator Gardner. We had a discussion at the last meeting that we heard the bill. I think she's worked very well with a number of outfits, including the department, Association of Alaska School Boards, and the School Administrators Associations, and has heard their request to get assistance in taking off some items from their agenda that may make room for this bill, which most folks think is very important. So I want to thank you for that work, and we continue to work on the bill and make it better. So with that, we'll take a brief at ease and transition over. Thank you. We're back in session. We move to our third and last item of the day. That is the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, Flexibility Waiver Act. This is going to be presented by Commissioner Hanley and staff, Dr. Susan McCulley. And this is a law that first came into being in 1965. This is it's been renewed and redone many times since. So it would appear that the department is looking at doing an update to the waiver, going for the waiver March 31st, I think, but we'll let you folks talk about that. So with that, please identify yourselves for the record and begin your testimony and be prepared for some questions.
Thank you, Chair Dunlap. For the record, my name is Mike Hanley. I'm the Commissioner for the Department of Education and Early Development. And it is probably worth just backing up just a little bit to explain why there is even a waiver in place. And that is simply that the latest iteration of ESEA, the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, is what we commonly hear as No Child Left Behind. That has been scheduled for reauthorization by Congress for over 7 or 8 years now. And every time it seems like they're getting close, and right now it seems like they're getting close again, and then things stop and nothing happens. And so the No Child Left Behind basically set a bar that said all of our students need to become proficient by 2014, 100% proficiency. And it had one common bar. Everybody needed to clear that bar for that. And short of that, schools were deemed failing. There were some restrictions, not a withholding, but some restrictions on how our Title I money was spent. If you remember back a couple of hearings ago, we talked about the Title I programs. So there's some restrictions on how that is spent. School districts needed to put in place plans for improvement. It was cumbersome, and it was really a dishonest model to say that even a school that had 95% of its students proficient was deemed failing, not making adequate yearly progress. So short of Congress reauthorizing ESEA, the No Child Left Behind Act, the Secretary for the U.S. Department of Education offered waivers from that. And we applied for a waiver. In 2013, we received it. And it allowed us some flexibility from some of the most onerous parts of that.
So, Commissioner, can I ask you a question? There was a waiver developed, correct, within the department? There was a waiver concept?
Yes.
USDOE.
Waivers were offered.
By USDOE.
And we applied.
Okay. And the bill itself, the law itself, has not been renewed. This was done out of USDOE, correct?
That's correct.
Which brings up an interesting thing all by itself, but that's another issue for another day.
Right. There are the Secretary of Education is allowed to provide waivers. There weren't real, I won't go into specifics on No Child Left Behind, but in any case, there were three principles to receive a waiver that needed to be considered. One was you need to have your own accountability system. If you're going to use this single bar, adequate yearly progress model, you had to develop your own. Two, you needed to have rigorous expectations for your students that when they left your school system, they would be prepared for the next step. We call that college and career ready. Our own statutes talk about ensuring that our students are able to be successful in their work and education. And three, you need to have a plan for supporting effective instruction and leadership. So I'm just going to, that brings us up to now the components that we addressed, and this we were asked to speak to our waiver renewal. We've had it for a couple of years, and we are up to renew that. We anticipate submitting a renewal to continue with our waiver by March 31st. So we'll walk through. There's only three principles. We'll just walk through what we're looking to put forward. I'll just start simply with the public comment process, because this is an open public process. And the first step is the top component there, and that is if people want to make comments to the U.S. Department of Education about our waiver renewal, they can do so by March 25th. We put out this announcement the end of February, so it allowed for a little under a month for people to make comments to the U.S. Department. Now, that's only one small part of it. We've also, to help with the public comments and to gain understanding for ourselves, we've had three webinars. We've had two webinars so far, and one more to come to provide public, to get public information and thoughts. And then for us to do this, we have to put this forward to our State Board of Education, which we will do Thursday and Friday, which is our next state board meeting. They will put out for public comment for the next, it's about 2.5 months, probably 2 months, the changes that we'll be looking at in our own regulations to move forward with our waiver. So three places to do, to make public comments. One straight to the U.S. Department of Education, one to our State Board of Education, and we've provided those opportunities through webinars. So the three components that I referenced. The first one is college and career-ready expectations for all of our students. We adopted our new standards, and I know you've heard different presentations on this. We adopted a new set of standards in 2012, June of 2012, that really sets the bar a little bit higher. We had those standards vetted with our university system to assure that students who were proficient on those standards were ready for those next steps. This year, beginning next month, we will actually be assessing for the first time students on those standards. So it'll have been almost 3 years since we've adopted those standards, and we'll be using a new assessment coming up. For this component of our waiver, we don't anticipate asking for anything different. Things are in place. Districts are working on, they've been teaching to new standards for about 3 years now, and we're on track. A recent monitoring visit by the U.S. Department of Education showed that not only in this component, but all three components, they said, boy, thank you for making our job so easy. Compared to other states that have received waivers, we were on track with what we had proposed. We were on track with our waiver in general, and they didn't have any real findings for us to make adjustments to. So in regards to rigorous expectations for our students, that will continue in our waiver as it is now. The second principle deals with that accountability system that moved us from that adequate yearly progress model to what we now have as our ASPE system. It's the Alaska School Performance Index. And that's a five-star system. It's not just did you make it or not, but it incorporates several components, not just proficiency. And it allows districts to see themselves on a scale of 1 to 5 stars. One of the primary components of that is different than the adequate yearly progress model is growth. The adequate yearly progress model said proficiency only. That's the only thing we're going to look at. And you don't get any credit for taking a student from the first percentile to right up underneath this bar. You could show 3 years of growth, you get no credit for them. But you could take a student and gain 2 points and go right from below that bar, right above the bar, and get credit for them because they cleared this proficiency bar. We have proficiency as one of our accountability measures, but we also have growth and recognize when schools are doing a good job and moving their students in the right direction, getting them on track, even though they haven't gotten there, they get credit for that. So since we have a new assessment coming up this year, and it really cannot feasibly be connected to our old assessment. Our standards are different. Our expectations are different. They're higher. We're not going to try to do a crosswalk backwards. This year, we're going to set a new baseline. So what we are asking for in our waiver is to take that five-star rating and that ASPE score for our schools, and we're going to freeze it this year because we don't have a growth model. We don't have a growth measure. This is a new benchmark. So next year, during the second year of the assessment, we will have growth. We'll be able to compare it to this year. So what we're asking for, is to freeze our ASPE scores. That's been done with other states. There have been ongoing conversations. We fully expect to be able to freeze those scores. The other thing we're looking at doing is resetting our annual measurable objectives, what we call our AMOs, based on this year's scores. And annual measurable objectives are simply targets for each school that are actually unique to each school. The goal of an annual measurable objective is to reduce by half the number of students who are not proficient over the course of six years. So the goal is, rather than 100%, the goal is to reduce by half. You're continually getting more and more of your students proficient. We think that that's realistic, but that means it's also very different for every school. Depending on what their baseline is, they will have different annual measurable objectives. So we are asking to reset that based on our new scores and our new assessment. It just seems to make sense that we're going to take this, our students are going to take this new assessment, and we're going to hold them harmless. There are no consequences for this new assessment. We're doing it on computer-based and higher expectations. I fully anticipate that the scores are going to drop, that they will show They will be less than they have been in the past because our targets are so much higher. It doesn't mean our students have regressed. I actually anticipate that they'll be higher than they were in the past, but not all the way up to our new bar. So that's the second component. And the third principle is supporting effective instruction and leadership. And what this means in simplicity is that we have connected student learning to teacher evaluations. That seems to make sense. Nobody describes a great teacher without speaking to how much their students learn. So for the first time, we've connected student learning to teacher evaluations. There are 8 standards that teachers are evaluated on. Student learning is now one of them. We're suggesting a couple of proposed changes. One is, that sounds like a simple thing. We'll just add one more standard. It's a big deal. Because how do we measure student learning? Well, one way is using this assessment, but not all students use that. We heard from principals, superintendents, and teachers, don't just use one measure. Don't make this one high-stakes thing for teachers. Use multiple measures. So in our model, we have 2 to 4 measures. And we intentionally did not at the department set those measures. That's a simple way to go. But districts use different curriculum, different methodologies. We've pictured charter schools and homeschools. We allow those districts to determine what we call our SLOs, our student learning objectives. We let them determine what measures will you use. If the students are taking this assessment in grades 3 through 10, as they always have, this will be one of them. But they will also get to choose another measure that they can use. So all that to say is that's a lot of work for districts to do. We are scheduled to do this next year and incorporate student learning data to teacher evaluations. We're asking to extend that a year, to not incorporate it. It's not because we don't want to be accountable. It's simply because of the amount of work. I'm more interested in doing things right than doing things fast. And as we talk to our superintendents and we talk to our principals, they are working hard to get this in place. And they're not all ready yet.
We have a couple questions.
Okay.
Thank you. You did good. Senator Gardner.
This recommendation, is that requiring a statute change?
To the chair, Senator Gardner, no, it doesn't. These are done through regulation.
Didn't we have legislation in the last session about this?
No, but you're on to what I was going to be asking.
Okay.
So when you say you're proposing, who are you proposing to? You're proposing changes to whom? To what body?
We're proposing these changes to the U.S. Department of Education as a part of our waiver.
And this is just mechanics, Commissioner. You're doing fine. My point is, it doesn't come to us. There's no proposal to us. We're actually out of the loop entirely in this whole thing. I mean, it's the mechanics. Years ago, well before I was here, I think well before anyone here was here, the legislature ceded authority to the department to do a whole number of things, including this. So all we do is, it's not belittling the process, it's just explaining the process. We hear a report, but we have no say in whether we accept or reject this ESEA waiver or these ESEA grants. We have no say, other than a public process.
Mm-hmm.
There's no formal process where we adopt or we approve. So you propose, okay, answer my question. You're proposing, when you say propose, it's to the USDOE. And apparently they don't go to their legislative body, Congress, either for it's different. You're doing it the way it's laid out in law. Apparently the U.S. Department of Education makes the decision without congressional input. That's above your pay grade. That's a whole other issue. So, in other words, you answer the question, the proposal goes to USDOE. We are merely bystanders at this stage of the game. Any questions? Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. just to understand this, so we're going to do a testing of our students, the AMP, and you've indicated the importance of growth, but you've also indicated that this is sort of a freezing it. We're not going to know that our students are doing better the first year. Is that right? There's nothing to compare them to.
Through the chair, that is correct.
So how can you say scores are going to drop? A drop compared to what?
Yeah, baseline-wise, good question.
Through the chair, I'm glad you brought that up because I'm trying not to use language that references, you know, a connection between the previous standards. But currently we have ballpark, 80% of our students that show proficiency. Now we're measuring things differently this coming year, but I would imagine that a lower percentage will be deemed in that higher ranking with our new assessment system. More parents will say, wait a minute, my student was proficient last year, now they have a 2 instead of a 3 or a 4, or they seem to be not doing as well.
Thank you.
Questions? I'll have several, but please continue.
Okay. So recognizing the work that our districts are doing, we are simply asking to put that off from one more year. Now, that's only the actual connection of the student learning to the teacher evaluations. We still want them to be developing their SLOs, their student learning objectives. We still want them to be moving forward with the frameworks that they're developing. But this will allow a year of piloting, if you will, without any requirements, without any consequences. It allows a year of trial. We think that makes sense. The second component there is actually the use of that data as a pilot. And the last one is one that actually I know has come to a lot of legislators. It came to the senator in regards to comments from the superintendents that when we first put it in, based on public comment, we quantified how much that student learning should be in, as a what size of a component it should be in our teacher evaluations. And there were all kinds of comments, but the state board settled on 20% of the teacher evaluations would be tied to student learning in the first year, then it would go to 35 again, up to 50% of a teacher's evaluation would be tied to student learning. We find that it's a little bit more complex, and there's a whole rubric on how teachers can be scored, but I find that problematic, because when a teacher's evaluation is 50% of student learning, it really shrinks the value of all the other positive things that a teacher does. And a teacher is more than just, and I know you know this, more than just someone who teaches academics. They are the carers for our kids. They are the connectors to parents. They are the empowerers. They wear multitude of hats. And when we raise it up to 50%, it devalues those other components. So what we're going to ask, similar to what was asked of us from the superintendent's group, was to remove that 20, 35, and 50 percentage requirements and just say that a significant portion of the evaluation will be a part of, will be student learning. So we're going to take out that quantifier, and we're going to make it one of the 8 standards that teachers are evaluated on. I think that makes sense. It's incorporated, but isn't overly weighted. So that's what we're going to ask for in this waiver. I think we've gotten a lot of comments from teachers and principals and superintendents in support of this particular component. So that's principle 3 and what we'll be asking for in our waiver. The waiver simply allows us to continue on the path we are on without having to go back under the adequate yearly progress model. There's no money tied to this. The only incentive for us, and it has been a lot of work to get us here, the only incentive for us is to provide a model that makes more sense, is more honest for our schools. And that's it in summary.
Questions? Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I admit I've become a bit of a skeptic on K-12 education because we're always tweaking around the margins and I haven't seen a lot of movement. But trend, not bad. Let's say that my child has a teacher that ever how we measure one of those 7 or 8 categories is absolutely totally delinquent in student learning. So, and it's 3 years in a row. What I go to you as a principal and I say, you know, I've been watching this teacher. I've been looking at the student learning, and it's clearly this teacher can't make a difference in the life of. Now, what do we do?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, when a teacher scores unsatisfactory in our new system, there are requirements for the school district to set in place plans for improvement to correct that, to improve that teacher's performance. Do you have more details? But basically, there are steps in place. That
no, I mean, I understand plans of improvement, but, you know, but once again, not to be a skeptic, but plans of improvement, you know, generally speaking, people get on a plan of improvement, and sometimes they're transferred from the school. We're all familiar with that. But they just mean they're in the system someplace. Maybe that's okay. I'm not sure. It gets to my point that I'm not sure that we've done anything here other than we've redefined our approach to it, and we feel good because student learning is an element, but it's a so what element, because even if we did away with element number three, it might make the teacher or correction the system feel good because we've done what the parents think they want, but I'm not so sure that the outcome that parents are looking for, accountability, not to fire teachers, but accountability. And I admit that's a skeptical approach, but that's kind of where I am, and I've said my piece. Thank you.
Questions? Senator Stevens.
I'm sort of carrying on in that light. I've always thought that student learning is key to effective teaching, and clearly, but you mentioned there are other items, so I thought it was tough to say teacher evaluation is tied to student learning, particularly if you tie salary and promotion and that sort of thing to student learning, but it concerns me a little bit when you're now removing that and saying it's important, but it's not the most important. There are other elements, and have we talked about those other elements, those other, you said eight things? I mean, I don't remember talking about them. Maybe we have, but I mean, on the one hand, it seems really harsh to say half your salary is attached or you're going to be based on how you teach, but isn't that what it's all about? You know, what else is there? Maybe I guess that's what I'm really asking.
Is it half your salary or half of your evaluation? What's the half, 50%
it was
part?
Half the evaluation. I'm sorry, I misspoke.
Okay.
Yeah, correct. It's half the evaluation and not tied to salary, although districts, if they chose to, but it's surely not a requirement.
And some states do tie some aspect of it to salary.
There's a performance pay. We don't have that in Alaska.
If you can answer Senator Stevens' questions on the eight issue, the eight other items.
There are eight components, and I won't be able to name all eight of them.
You have a license?
This is a test.
Yeah, if somebody has the regs with those. For instance, knows the curriculum and how to teach it. That's one of them. Connects to the community and the parents is another one. Contributes to the profession is another one. Those are the types of things that are in there that are all part of a teacher's evaluation.
Learning environment, an effective learning environment in their classroom for teaching, for learning.
Who are you?
I'm sorry, my apologies. For the record, Susan McCauley, Director of Teaching and Learning Support for the Department of Education and Early Development.
Senator?
Well, I agree, those are all really important. But in taking that out and removing that, are we weakening what we are building in having any kind of evaluation tied to learning?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, it still needs to be a significant part of the evaluation. And it allows the administrator, and actually this is for administrators as well, but it allows the evaluator to recognize that importance in the evaluation. We do that without specifying that it has to be quantifiable to a certain percentage. It could be argued that if we don't say it's 50%, if we don't say it's 35%, it may be deemed less. But it does give the evaluator the ability to determine the overall effectiveness of the teacher.
Thank you.
Just a question. How much are we getting through the ESEA grants? Again, you reported a couple weeks ago on that. Roughly how much? How many millions?
Chair Dunleavy, there's none tied to this waiver. I don't remember right off the top of my head.
There's no...
I believe it was over $200 million in federal funds that we get through ESEA.
Here comes another lifeline.
Yeah, perfect.
And you are, or somebody want to read for you? It's in that big book that they put out.
Les Morris, for the record, Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Education Early Development. When the commissioner mentioned the $200 million, that would be all federal funds, but when we're talking about ESEA, we're somewhere in the $60 million range.
60-ish?
63, 67. I'm not sure the exact number, but it would be in for the ESEA.
Those are your various titles?
Those are the various titles that fall under ESEA.
Thank you. Okay, that answers that question. It may seem academic to some, but it's very important to me, is we were using the pronouns with Senator Huggins and Senator Stevens, we. We actually have nothing to do with this. We don't approve it as it stands now. I mean, this is almost a courtesy that the department is doing. The way the laws were seated and the way the relationship is, you go to your state school board to see if they'll approve the acceptance of this waiver, correct? And so basically it's the executive that decides a large part of this, and the executive decides, and this has been embedded in a budget act many, many years ago, that they can accept millions, they can accept, theoretically speaking, hundreds of millions of dollars without our approval, because that was ceded, and that the department, and this is not a trial, I'm just making sure when folks say we have nothing to do with, you're just reporting to us, we have no legal authority as we stand today over whether we accept this grant, whether we don't, whether we accept the waiver, whether we don't, whether we change our standards, whether we don't, whether we change our assessments, whether we don't. We don't have any of that. The legislature does not. And only the school districts only have they have a legal right to adopt curriculum, as we spoke in the earlier, with the earlier bill, but we don't have the authority to adopt curriculum either, state school. The legislature. So we have no real educational policy input into education from a legislative approach. And one of the reasons I asked the department to present was I wanted to get a better idea of what we were looking at, but also this is coming up when? March?
25th is the end of
right.
The comment.
And theoretically, if we said, which we're not prepared to today, but if we said, you know, we don't really like what you're doing, technically speaking, we can only do that through the public input process because we have no legal authority to do that. Chances are you'll renew the application, correct?
That would be our goal. Much much more preferable than going back to adequate yearly progress.
Okay. Really, all the questions I have.
If I could add to that,
please English, and then I have Senator Huggins and then Senator Stevens, I believe.
I do feel that sitting in this seat before the legislature and recognizing that my role is more in the executive branch, I have a responsibility. When I say we, I speak of we as a state, and this joint responsibility both to fund and implement public education. So I do feel a sense of accountability as I look you in the eyes and say, this is what we've done, and this is the reason that we have done it, because we think it continues with the vision of improving education. Surely open to these conversations, I think they're healthy. But there is that level of accountability.
Yeah.
And I know you weren't insinuating anything else. But these conversations are important, and I surely don't feel like a rogue when we're moving forward to access funding to meet the needs of our kids. So, but I will, and at some point after questions, I can go through these real quickly. Les brought up the standards for teachers, and I can go through this real quickly.
Senator Huggins and Senator Stevens.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Commissioner, you're from the Anchorage School District originally coming here. I'm not sure about this year or the one preceding 2014. What I've read on Anchorage over time, that some school have upwards of 50% migration rate of students. Is that roughly kind of true or not?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, that could be true in a couple of the schools. The the Title I schools, the students that with students with high poverty. We have a couple of schools that are like that. 50% seems high, but the Mountain View types of schools in Fairview.
You know, there's athletic programs. I mean, there are lots of reasons kids migrate. But let's for the conversation for a moment, let's say it's 50% in the school that I'm the principal of and you're the superintendent of. I don't know how the superintendent and the principal can create an accountability factor for the teacher. If you got 50% students that kind of wander into your classroom and 50% that leave and you go, golly, how am I going to do this component on student learning? But am I being overly dramatic or?
To the chair, Senator Huggins, no, you're not. And you're reflecting the comments that a lot of teachers have had and several principals have had and that we have tried to address. We've worked extensively we don't have a nice clean model. And intentionally so. The nice clean model is, here's the model everybody uses. We allow for things that are outside of a teacher's control, whether it's transiency or homelessness or a death in the family or foster care that has caused issues, personal issues for a child. We allow those to be considered when considering a student's learning into a teacher's evaluation. We allow those to be set aside, if you will. The scores are in the aggregate for the whole class. But we also allow them to take into account those types of
Mr. Chairman, I just want the record to show that I was defending teachers. So, thank you.
Yeah.
Let the record reflect that. Senator Stevens.
Well, just an issue of tenure. Is there a connection between student learning and teacher evaluation and tenure? Are they connected in any way or not?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, not really. Tenure is that component that brings some security to teachers at a given year, but they're really not connected to this conversation directly.
So the commissioner and staff have been very kind with their time and their patience because I ask a lot of questions because I'm trying to understand where we've been. Because we don't know what things are going to be like with this fiscal situation. We're going to have to start talking about where we're going. One of the fascinating things is, in doing as much research as I can on education and the department's role in it, whenever they do things like this, a waiver or a new idea, and Secretary Duncan comes up with his own idea because Congress hasn't acted fast enough for him, so he's come up with an idea on waivers, et cetera, et cetera. I look at where this may have been done before and how well is it performing. So the only schools I can go to would be the schools that the U.S. government has direct control over, which are BIA schools. So I was looking at a government accounting organization report, and they spend over $20,000 per student in the BIA schools, and their scores are terrible. And so these are the questions that I'm constantly, I guess, confronting myself with. And then you go back and you say, well, why are we adopting these things? Then you go and you see that the law was, or the authority was ceded to the department a long time ago. Again, not that the department isn't doing anything wrong, but just we have no say in this. We really have no say in education because we ceded that away. And so I don't know about the rest of the committee. I have some questions as to whether, personally, I think we should be comfortable with that status quo as we move forward, or if we need to get more involved in major policy adoptions or major policy changes. And that's not, again, a reflection on the department as much as it is we are the representatives of the people. You are the representatives, technically speaking, of the executive, including the school board. They're not elected, they're appointed. I'm not saying you don't care about the people. I'm not saying you don't want to work with the people. I'm not saying that. But if we were to say right now, if I was to say, I don't like this and I don't want you to adopt it, I have no authority to do that. And if this committee said, yes, we don't like this and we don't want to adopt it, this committee has no authority to do that, nor does the legislature have anything to do with that. I'm just pointing out what exists under law right now. So you're going for a waiver. You're going to go to the school board. I would imagine that this year the school board will adopt the waiver and waivers adopted, and we continue to do things that we've been doing. And I'm not judging those things that we're doing. I have no doubt that we all want the best for our kids, and we're trying to figure out how to affect certain changes. But I just want to bring this up that probably moving forward, I may have some ideas for the committee to ponder on changing some of these things to get us more more into a real we relationship. I was reading a recent court case that was decided or decree a couple years ago, the Moore case, and one of the lines in there stuck with me, and that is where the judge said that the legislature has a duty to maintain, establish, and maintain, and they cannot delegate their responsibility to maintain education. So I would hope and I would look forward to having discussions with the committee about having a closer relationship with the department over time. But with that said, if we have any input into this, we do it through the open public process, correct?
That's correct. And if this committee has individual thoughts, I have a responsibility to listen as well, especially in your role as legislators.
Again, I want to thank them for putting on these presentations for us to understand more about our relationship and what the department's doing and where we're going educationally. And are there any further questions for the commissioner and staff regarding this? Senator.
Just a comment. I truly appreciate the fact that you've set the bar higher, that we are expecting more of our children, that we have standards that are higher. And I don't think there's any Alaskan, I would think, that doesn't want his or her child to be able to compete in the world and be able to get a job or a vocational or go to the university. So I think what you've done to this point, is quite admirable. It concerns me about the freezing things and putting and not knowing. So I guess the question would be, how quickly are we going to know whether you're right or not? How quickly are we going to have some responses? Is it going to take a year or two or three before we really know whether progress has been made?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, that's a great observation, and I think it won't be a matter of what the test scores look like. It'll be a matter of how many of our students are walking into the next phase of life prepared. Currently, we're looking at too many of our students needing remediation when they walk into the university or training programs. I think that's our measure, because that's our goal, is to prepare our kids for that stage. So no matter what their test scores look like, are we really doing our job walking them into those next stages? So we'll continue to work with the university and those training centers, especially here in Alaska, and see how we're doing. I think that'll be the proof for us.
You had eight items that you were going to go over. You had eight items in that book.
Just take a second.
Yes, for the Senate. Yes, please do it.
So some of the things that are expected of our teachers in Alaska. A teacher understands how students learn and develop and applies that knowledge in a teacher's practice. A teacher teaches students with respect for their individual and cultural characteristics. Performances that reflect attainment of this standard include, and it talks about incorporating characteristics of students and the local community's culture. The next one, a teacher knows the teacher's content area and how to teach it. Number five, a teacher facilitates, monitors, and assesses student learning. And underneath it, there are little bullets about this is what it would look like, but I won't go into all those. A teacher creates and maintains a learning environment in which all students are actively engaged and contributing members. A teacher works as a partner with parents, families, and community. A teacher participates in and contributes to the teaching profession. And now, I don't have the language in front of me for, I don't think, do we, for the student learning component. So those are the eight standards that we hold our teachers accountable for and that they're evaluated on. Thank you.
Any closing questions or comments for the commissioner staff? Thank you very much. Any closing comments? We have a meeting next Tuesday, March 19th at 4 p.m. And that will be, we'll be having confirmation hearings during that meeting. And then we'll work on the bill. So with that, I want to thank everyone, and we are adjourned.